That's right. We are back once again for the 237th time. The Parish of the Patriots. We just keep trucking and y'all keep coming back. And I really do appreciate it. I'm glad you are here this week. Well, if you listened to yesterday's and Friday's show, you know, I've been under the weather and I'm still sick while I'm recording this. I'll just give you a time frame. You know, I recorded the Friday show on Thursday. I recorded the Monday show on Friday and I'm recording this show on Saturday. So, I mean, those days are kind of crammed together. So I am still sick. I'm still under the weather. I mean, it's nothing major. I mean, no, I've been kidding it, but I've been telling everybody they're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, it's Doom Virus 2.0, the return of the deadly pandemic, or as we used to call it back in my day, a really bad head cold. It's what it is. It's a really bad head cold. And, you know, I'm taking my meds. I'm taking my meds. It amazes me. We got to get into the rest of the show, but I got to get off on this. Because I'm on cold pills and I don't feel good, we're just going to be all over the place today. But it amazes me. The science tries to catch up with Grandpa Dan. I remember years ago, they took the cold medicine that works, the little red pills, and they moved them all behind the counter. You had to give your driver's license, 3 pints of blood, and a sperm sample in order to get the cold medicine that works. Because they said this was going to stop people from cooking meth. It didn't, but you still got to go and get, it's a typical government policy, still got to go get the cold medicine. You got to give your life history to get the cold pills. Now, you didn't have to do that because they had all these other cold medicines out in front, out there on the counter. You just go pick them up. You didn't have to do that. I have said for, I don't know, whatever it is, 20 some odd years since they did that, I have said that crap they sell out there in the front, it doesn't work. It does not work. When I have something like what I got right now, yeah, I go give my life history and give me the damn red pills from behind the counter because that's the only thing that works. That crap they sell out front, you know what it does? It makes me thirsty. That's it. I'm still sneezing. I'm still stuffed up. It doesn't do anything. Give me the red pills. Now, what the hell does this have to do with anything you're asking? I saw an article the other day, and the science has announced, after much research, that all of that stuff out there in the front, all these over-the-counter cold medicines, none of it works. All these people that are like, of course it works. The government would not approve it if it didn't work. The science has now announced that none of that shit works. And when asked, well, what does work? They said, well, those red pills that are difficult to get because you got to go to the pharmacist and give them your life history, those work. All the people listening to the science have been suffering with bad head colds and no relief except getting thirsty. For all these years, they could have just listened to me. They could have just listened to me. It amazes me because people think that's the way this FDA approval thing works. This is why people have it in their heads that it works. The pharmaceutical companies do this research and they do the science, which means they do these experiments to see if this particular drug does this particular thing. And after doing their experiments and amassing their research and redoing them and replicating them, yes, indeed. And then they hand that to the government. Again, this is the way people think it works in their minds. Then the FDA comes in with their independent researchers and they take that information and they themselves then replicate the science and replicate the experiment to see if this drug does this thing. And when it does do that thing, everybody is replicated. Everybody knows it works. The FDA puts their stamp of approval on it. And there you go. Voila. It's a new drug. That ain't the way it works. The pharmaceutical companies do their research to get the conclusion they want. They hand it to the government. The government rubber stamps it and says, well, sounds good to me. Not like you would lie. And off it goes to market. It's an annoyance when it comes to things like cold pills, but you have to understand they do this with everything, including the vaccine. The science says it's safe. Yeah, the science has also been telling you for 20 years that crap out on the counter is going to do something for you besides make you thirsty. It doesn't. Should have listened to me. Don't get vaxxed. Get the red pills. Back on topic. If you are new here, we do have a Christian specific segment, a sermon, if you would. And it is roughly in the halfway mark of the show. I encourage you to stay around. Listen. It's not going to be, if you think it's just going to be whatever you would hear normally, Like, go down to your local church somewhere. It's probably not. You might actually get something for it. I have non-believers tell me they always tune in and listen. Maybe the Jesus thing ain't for me, but I do get entertainment. I do like hearing what you got to say about these things. So give it a shot. Unless you are an absolute atheist, Berg, then don't, because your brain will melt. You won't be able to handle it. Everything you see is what you get. You get this entire show for free. That's what kind of a bargain. This is a bargain basement show. You get everything for free. I don't got anything behind a paywall, on a Patreon, anywhere hidden. If you think the show sucks, I'm sorry. I don't have better content anywhere for you. But if you think it doesn't necessarily suck, I do ask that you throw something in the plate. And I say that. I know that, you know, you probably listen to more shows than this one. And everybody is asking for your donations and for your voluntary support. I get that. And I get that people tied on money, and I ain't asking you to send me your life savings, but if you get something out of it, throw a few bucks. You know, I take everything. You'll notice when I do the listener supporter mailbag, which we're fixing to get into, I never ever mention how much people give. You know, like when they do those, what do they call those chat things, you know, like on video, you know, and they'll say, so-and-so gave $10, so-and-so gave $50. I will never do that. Oh, I will never do that. I do the listener supporter mailbag. I will never say who gave what. It's the way I roll. If you do get something out of it, put a little something in the plate. It's easy to go look on my description page here for the Parish of the Patriots. It's on this show's description page. I don't put this information on the Daily Nationalist shows I'm hosting that I'm filling in for Sven. I put my Sven Longshanks on those because those are Sven shows. I'm just sitting in, keeping the seat warm for him while he's away. But go to the description page for the Parish of the Patriots. I've got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero, email address, drop your notes. If you got altcoins, I'll take those. Drop me an email. I'll get you an address for them. I ain't proud. Don't be embarrassed. I mean, really, snail mail. It doesn't get easier than that. With that having been said, let us venture off into the listener supporter mailbag. Dan, the link you gave for Gibson Go is very easy to use. Thanks for providing that information. It does require names and addresses, though, if there are some concerns by some of your listeners. Thanks for the work you guys do. And that's from Greg. Thank you, Greg. And yeah, on the Sven Longshank stuff, I mean, there's multiple ways if you want to financially support Sven. I ask that even if you don't, you know, if you're unable or whatever to do that, at least send the man a letter. But if you are going to do financial support, that's what I do. I'm going to tell you all right now, I do the Gibson Go. Sometimes listeners aren't, like you say, comfortable that they got to put their whole name on there. And I get that. I get people were worried. And these are crazy, crazy times we're living in. I'll just say that, you know, I understand. I'm not one of these people like, you know, oh, yeah, don't be anonymous. Why are you being anonymous? I understand the risks. I will say this. With the way things are going, you're not going to be able to be anonymous forever because at some point in time, things are quickly approaching, I think, the level to where people are going to have to publicly make a stand. By publicly make a stand, I mean saying no. You know, like for me, when they're warming up Doom Virus 2.0, I'm of course not taking the vax and I'm not putting the mask on. I didn't do that before. Before I did put it on when I get to the cancer doctor, because you got all these people in here like on the verge of death doing chemotherapy, and it's like, you know, it makes them feel better. I'll do it. I'm kind of at the point now, I don't think I'm going to do it even then, because they took that away now. Now that they've taken that off, and I'm thinking, well, you know, if you were keeping those people safe or at least making them feel better, you would do it continuously. Why did you remove that mandate now? They ain't dropping like flies now. So if they put it back, I may just tell the cancer doctor I ain't doing it. I don't know. Anyway, what I mean is, at some point in time, you know, we're quickly getting to the point, you know, and like I say, with a public stand, I mean just simply saying, no, I'm not going to go along with it. I'm not going to do it. You know, I mean, getting out in the streets and screaming at people and what I'm just saying. You're going to get on a list. You're going to get on a list one way or the other one of these days, I can assure you. And I understand, look, I'm not telling you, you know, you're wrong for trying to keep your anonymity as long as you can. I get that. I respect that. Me, believe me, I do. I'm not being critical at all. I'm just saying in the back of your mind, you need to be kind of preparing for the day when they're going to demand you do something and you got to say no and you're going to be on the list. Let's keep going. Dan, once again, I thank you and Matt Johnson for babysitting Sven's website. I'm sure the deep state was hoping that in Sven's absence, the website would atrophy and die. Yep, you're doing what you can to beat them, you and Matt, with extra work, and we, the listeners, are staying loyal. Here's my contribution for September. Always best regards, and that's from Eric, and I do appreciate it. We are. We're doing what we can to hold the fort, and it's funny because now I have access to website traffic, a little insider information. I'm going to share insider information with you. And there was a huge spike in traffic for the site on the day Sven was sentenced. On the day they sent Sven to prison for charges, I still don't even understand exactly what they were. I don't understand how you get brought up on charges with no complainant. Just the government saying, well, somebody could have found this offensive, and they couldn't even find one person to come forward and said, yeah, I listened to this and it made me hate everybody. They couldn't find one person to say I was a victim of hatred from this website. Nevertheless, when they sent Sven to prison that day, there was a huge spike in traffic on the website. And I thought, well, that's kind of curious. And then I found out that the press over there in Britain, and I guess in Wales, more specifically, I don't know, in the UK, but I heard from several people that the media was having a meltdown over there because they really thought that when Sven went to jail, like that day, the website would go down. Like it was over. He's in jail. The website has disappeared. We won. And they were just beside themselves. They didn't go away. Dr. Johnson and myself are still here. I really appreciate all of you. You're talking about the listeners staying loyal, and that says something about y'all. I do appreciate it. I know Dr. Johnson and myself both, we put out the best content we have, and I realize just two guys. And Sven had his own unique takes and is, of course, obviously his own personality and stuff. And it just, we've lost a certain amount of, for lack of a better term, we've lost a certain amount of diversity here. At Radio Albion with Sven's loss, it is what it is. It's coming back. I mean, you can get a life sentence for vaguely stirring up something. We have no idea what, but he will be back with us at some time. I'm looking forward to it more than you know. GPD, I'm not a plate thumper. God bless and keep you. That's from Mr. T. Thank you for not being a plate thumper. For those of you who don't know what it means, when you went to church back when I was a kid, you go to church and we'd make a joke. They'd pass the offering plate around. I was a little kid. I didn't have no money to put in the plate, and I'd thump the plate like I'm putting something in there. Thump. Just like, ain't nobody fooled. Thank you for not being a plate thumper. Thank you for all of you for throwing something in. It all means a lot. I do very much appreciate it. Like I say, I am under the weather. I have nothing to talk about. I don't know. We might just sit here we're just going to sit here and visit. I got all kinds of stuff. I won't talk about the Christian-specific segment. But, I went off about the red cold pills. That was my big material for the first half of the show. I got nothing left. I'm sorry. There's no telling. If the quality goes down between now and the Christian-specific segment, don't bail. Don't bail on me. I find it humorous. One of the overall things I find humorous is these has-been countries. These has-been countries that pretend like they're still important. I saw a story this morning before sitting down to record the show. And like I said, I'm recording this on Saturday morning. And I saw where the minister for foreign affairs for Germany, Angelina Baerbock. See, I've decided that's funny. That was a little funny on my part. Under the influence of cold medicine is funny. I don't know. It may not be funny to y'all. I've decided that these I'm not even going to try anymore. I don't think I'm going to try to pronounce these foreign names correctly. I'm just going to put something humorous on it. Angelina Baerbock had come out and referred to President Xi of China as a dictator. And I'm thinking, why do you think they care? You're going around insulting people on purpose. Why would anybody conduct themselves like this? And these are supposed to be, quote unquote, diplomats. These are supposed to be professionals. It's like if you look at the way these people do their alleged jobs, It would be like if you went to get a cup of coffee at one of those, from one of those baristas or whatever, if you're one of those people, that's not me. I just make Maxwell House or Folgers in my K-Cup machine. And no, I'm too cheap to buy those K-Cup coffees. I got the little baskets that you shovel the coffee in because that crap's too expensive if you buy those little disposable. You buy a whole big thing of Maxwell House and the little filters and you just put it. You don't care about that, did you? What the hell was I talking about? Anyway, if you went to one of those places, though, and you aren't like me and make your own damn coffee and you're paying $7 for a cup of coffee and the barista stands there in front of you, pours it up, puts that little creamy crap on top, makes a little smiley face, and then hawks a big loogie in it, you would demand that person be fired. You'd be like, you're really bad at your job. And yet you get these people and their alleged job is some form of diplomacy, like Angelina Bareback. She's supposed to be a diplomat. If you're a diplomat, your job should be like, it doesn't matter. You should be able to sit across from anybody from any country and discuss the business at hand. Of course, you throw that out the window when you put a woman in charge. Of course, you're not going to get that. And all these places in Europe all seem to have women running this crap or allegedly running it. Women figureheads in these positions. But it's like, you're not relevant. You got these women presidents for these non-countries like Estonia and Lithuania that nobody cares about. They're not even real countries. And yet you got these women in charge and they're always at the forefront yapping. You know, they're always like, Putin better watch out. Putin this, Putin that. And he better, look, Lithuania bitch. If he wants to roll through you tomorrow, ain't nobody going to stop him. You know, ain't nobody going to stop him. If you think the U.S. is going to go to war, direct confrontational NATO war with Russia over Estonia or some non-country, you are dreaming. You're going to find out that whole Article 5, NATO Article 5, that holds about as much weight as what normal conservatives are slowly learning that the Constitution has done as far as the government honoring their rights. These same people look over here in the U.S. and the government treats the Constitution as just an old, worthless piece of paper. And yet these people run around and act like Article 5. A dumb bitch running some little non-country over there ought to keep her damn mouth shut. She ought to go meet Putin and offer to give him. Never mind. This is a family-friendly show. She ought to go over there, offer him any kind of favors. Just make sure we stay in your good graces. Look, we just a sort of non-country country. Please don't roll over us. We don't want any part of this. We don't want to get sandwiched between this. We don't want to make, we can't afford, we're non-country. We can't afford to make an enemy of the U.S., but, you know, we live in your neighborhood. We're homies. We can be cool. Reach over here under the table, patch you, whatever we need to do. Just want to stay friendly. No, bitch running around acting like Article 5 means I can talk all the crap I want to. It's almost like you have these toxic women, you know. And they always looking for, they go somewhere where there's a gathering of men and they're going to find a way to do a you and him fight over me. You see, that whole female thing about being the center of attention always comes front and center. It is. You're looking at the geopolitical equivalent of you and him fight over me. I'm going to get up here and I'm going to flirt with this other guy here and I'm going to insult this other guy here. And when I'm done insulting this other guy here, if he comes over here and threatens to slap the shit out of me, I'll go get my man here said he's going to whip your ass because you're threatening to slap shit out of me for opening my stupid mouth. You're doing it on a geopolitical scale. Well, these days, dumb bitch may find out her man done stepped out the back door. Her man ain't going to get his ass whipped because she running her mouth. Article 5. I guarantee you, push comes to shove, that whole Article 5, they're always waving around. That shit is a bluff. I'm going to tell all y'all right now. If you live in one of these, because we got listeners all over, and I make fun, like if I have listeners, if you're in Estonia or Lithuania, I'm not making fun of you. I'm making fun of your government, and I'm making fun of your family-friendly, your female alleged leadership. If you live in Germany, I'm making fun of Angelina Bareback and your joke of a puppet government, which is just as much a puppet government as the Zelensky regime in Ukraine. I'm not making fun of you. I'm not insulting you personally, you as people. You know I love y'all. But these people running around, they act like that Article 5. I guarantee you that'd go out the window. That's a bluff. You live in Poland and you're trying to repeat the mistakes of your ancestors by writing checks that your ass can't cash. Look, learn a little bit from history. The U.S. going to bail on you just like Britain bailed on you in World War II. They ain't going to go. U.S. ain't going to go. Article 5 means as much to this government internationally as the First Amendment means to this government when it comes to the citizens here in this country. Y'all going to find out. Y'all all going to be Americans getting your rights trampled on. You say, well, we signed this agreement, Article 5. Where the hell y'all at? Well, we lending you our moral support as they going out the back door. That's what you're going to find out. Angelina Bareback going to be over there. She ain't going to be able to do no favors. By then, be too late. Always talking smack. And just consummate unprofessionalism. I mean that. You should be, if you were a diplomat, is your job. You could hire, you know, to be a professional, to be able to sit across from anybody representing another country, regardless of your personal feelings. Of course, again, you put a woman in this position, you're always going to get their personal feelings because that's what everything centers around. You should be able to sit across of a person, regardless of your personal feelings, and find some way to work with them somehow. You would be better off putting any man, period, into that position than somebody like Angelina Bareback. I'm just going to say that name over and over. Like I said, I'm decided to just start giving it. I'm not even trying to pronounce these names. I'm just giving them whatever name I feel like. I may change my mind when I feel better and I'm not taking cold medicine. I'm not down to drinking NyQuil during the daytime, but I'm not above doing that. Then things are going to get really crazy. You can take a man who's a car salesman, who sells automobiles, and say, we're going to make you the diplomat. And that guy's going to do a better job of sitting down across from him because the guy selling a car, he's got to sell a car. He might be sitting across from a customer and he's thinking, this guy's a real asshole. I don't like this guy. But he's going to sit there and smile and be their best friend because he got to get that car sold. He's got a goal. He ain't worried about his personal feelings. He's going to set that aside because he got a job to do. We don't have any of that. There's no diplomacy. It's funny watching old people than not being able to grasp that. You know, like Henry Kissinger, he comes out once in a while. He's still alive. They open the coffin and he comes out and he's like, well, hey, what are y'all doing? This is not diplomacy. He just can't believe it. I can't believe it either, Henry. But it is what it is. You know, and you hear crazy stuff. And then you look at things and the more you see them, you say, there's got to be some kind of truth to it. Like, you remember when, like, all these people, these politicians, were all of a sudden showing up with black eyes, and everybody was saying, there were people saying it was some sort of satanic ritual, or it's a symbolism. Because, like, you had Mitch McConnell showed up with a black eye. I think George Bush showed up with a black eye. Obama probably showed up with a black eye, but nobody noticed. You had these people showing up with a black eye, and people are like, it symbolizes something. I'm like, I don't know, maybe. I don't know. Nothing would surprise me, I guess. And then you have Sergeant Schultz, the alleged ruler of the whatever it is, Germany now, whatever Germany counts as, I guess, the U.S. occupied version puppet state of Germany. And he comes out the other day and he's gone a step further. He ain't got a black eye. It's always the right eye. You know what I'm saying? And he got an eye patch on. At first, when I first saw that, I thought he was making fun of that Crenshaw or whatever his name is guy here in the U.S., you know, that goes around like a pirate. Like, they don't make false eyes. You know, it's like, I lost an eye in the war in Iraq. It's like, well, they make false eyes, you know, where people can't even tell. You know, you ain't even got to do that. I mean, it's like, you know, like you're wearing the eye patch because you're trying to promote an image. You ain't fooling nobody with that Crenshaw guy. I'm a war vet. Look, I lost an eye fighting for your freedoms against Afghanistan or whatever. Of course, you lost and our freedoms. Well, never mind. Our freedoms aren't here anymore and you lost. But our freedoms sure as hell weren't taken by the Taliban now, were they? I get so sick of the marketing, the endless marketing. You know, that story I was reading about Angelina Bareback, I said that name again because I think it's so damn funny. And she wrapped it up with that stupid marketing slogan. But these countries that are a threat to the, you know, the rules-based international order, I'm sick of your marketing slogan. We get it. Okay, you focus grouped this and you think it plays really well. It doesn't. It's an annoying slogan. Yes, people know what you're going to say. We know by the end of the article, we're going to hear about the rules-based international order that nobody can define, but you think if you keep saying it, everybody will believe it's true. It's on marketing. That Crenshaw guy. I think that's his name. I'm too lazy to look it up. I don't feel like it. But you know what I'm talking about. The pirate is the only guy that walks around in public in the Congress nonetheless and wears a damn eye patch around like they don't make false eyes. Now get it. Look, he may have more damage there. You know what they use for that? It's called shades. You know, if you're familiar with country music, you know, one of my favorite country music singers of days gone by is Hank Williams Jr. The original Hank Williams' son. And you'll notice that man always got shades on. You know why he got shades on? Because back in the early 70s, he fell off a mountain and slid down that thing face first and messed his whole damn face up. That's why he always has a beard. He always has shades on. Aim for a fashion look. He lost an eye. And even though, yeah, they got other eye or whatever they can put in there, his that part of his face still messed up. That's why he always wears shades. But he just looks cool. You just look at him and go, man, Bo Seif is cool. Like, Bo Seif is one cool cat, man. You look at this congressman walking around like a damn pirate. Oh, I got me eye patch on because I don't want you to forget I went to Afghanistan and fought for your freedoms. It's marketing. Stupid. Very tiresome. Very tiresome. Although I have to admit, like, I've always said, heaven forbid. But like, if I were to like lose a leg, like when I was doing the cancer surgery, I told everybody, you know, when my first cancer surgery, and they had to, you know, carve up my leg like a chunk of meat. And I made a joke. I told everybody, I said, if they have to amputate my leg, like at the knee, I'm totally, you know, they'd be like, wait, if that happened, don't worry, they make good prosthetics. No, I'm getting me is a peg leg. I'm totally walking around with a peg leg. Not for marketing, just because I think it'd be funny. But people stare at you. That's what's funny. Clunk, 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 clunk. I'd hold my hand up like a hook and go, arr. But someone like this Crenshaw guy, he's doing it like serious. Like you're supposed to take this guy seriously. Why is his eye patch around? And what the hell was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Schultz. He shows up and he's wearing this big eye patch around. He's making these speeches with the eye patch on. Arr, what the hell is that? Put some shades on, you fool. I don't know. It's probably some requirement that it's like some subtle form of publicly declaring your allegiance to the Antichrist, you know, professing your faith in your Lord and Father, Satan. Something demonic. I would even say that joking. I think that's probably what it is. You know, you look at all the one eye symbology on these music videos. They all have to attest. They all got triangles and one eye everywhere. They have to, you know, part of the deal when you make the deal with the devil. See, just like it's an inversion of Christianity. You know, you're supposed to, you know, publicly, you as a Christian, you get part of getting baptized. That's your public announcement that you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. So you're putting that out there for the world to see. See, Satan always does an inversion thing. It's lighthearted enough that I'm not putting this in the Christian-specific segment, which we're fixing to get into, by the way. You know, and Satan is an inversion of that. So these people have to go out and profess their faith in Satan, that they have sold their soul. They're making the announcement that they reject God and have sold their soul to Satan. So they're going to do this old one eye and this triangle thing and all the rest of it. Go out there with the eye patch on so everybody knows you gave your soul. You went through the ceremony and you're officially that way. Everybody else that's a member of the Satan club that are going to hell, they know that you're officially a member of the club. You came out with the eye patch on or whatever the hell else. Anyway, y'all tired of hearing me rambling about stuff you don't care about. Let's get into the Christian specific segment. I promise you it'll be it will be better. So without further ado, y'all know what to do. Get in there. Let's fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as we jump right off into our fun-filled Christian-specific segment, let's jump back into the listener-supporter mailbag. Grandpa, on your most recent Parish of the Patriots episode about God, our Father, What advice would you give to all the current and expecting fathers out there amongst the listeners on how to keep our kids in the arms of the Lord and safe from being lampshaded by clown world? My advice would be to keep all vaccines out of your kids and your kids out of the public schools, and probably most of the so-called private schools as well. Poison for their bodies and their minds. My stepson is really getting into church and God, but he goes to a major MCC that is only a step or two below Joel Osteen on the glitz and glam scale. I was impressed by their sophisticated musical and media presentations when I went to his baptism, but it just seemed so, well, MCC. Anyway, he came home the other day saying the Bible says men should be soft-hearted. He couldn't explain exactly what it means to, as a man, have a soft heart. So I was hoping you could discuss it in a show one of these days. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I take it to mean a man should be kind and merciful when appropriate and hard as stone. Likewise, I get the feeling this young lad might take it to mean a Christian should just let people use him as a doormat. Thank you for all you do. Keep the faith and truth alive. Much brotherly love. No homo, of course. Durka durka jihad. Thank you very much. And there's a little bit to unpack here before we get to the second part, which is obviously the reason why I saved this for the Christian specific segment. We'll do the first part. And I think you're right. As far as, you know, how do you go about, you know, how do you try to protect your family, you know, your kids in clown world? Because, you know, as a father, you want to protect your children, and it's multifaceted. I mean, obviously you protect their physical safety as best you can, but they're assailed on every level. Mentally, spiritually, we don't even have to get into these stories where they're trying to convince little kids that they're trannies. I mean, it never ends. Now, you pointed out the vaccines, and I've already kind of shared this in private with the listener, but I wanted to go ahead and pass it on to all of you. Because bringing up the vaccines is one of those things that's guaranteed to get you labeled a conspiracy theorist, which usually means somebody that's pretty spot on or pretty dang close to getting to the truth when it comes to the lies that they pummel us with. When they can't defend their position, always remember, when they can't defend their position, they're going to call you names. You know, and they always try to get you off on you know, defending yourself from these names. Conservatives and normies fall for this all the time. They might bring up a decent point. They get called a conspiracy theorist, and the rest of the time is spent explaining how I'm not a conspiracy theorist, when the person who should be defending their stance is the one who's lying. And take vaccines, for instance. You point out, you know, talk about vaccines, and they'll say you're a conspiracy theorist. And like I say, the trap is to start explaining how you're not a conspiracy theorist when it is they who should explain how the hell they can stand there with a straight face and say these vaccines, you know, don't do things like cause autism. Because they'll always revert. I guarantee you ahead of time, they'll fall back on appealing to authority. The science says, well, the government wouldn't allow. Well, the government. I shared this little tidbit of information already through email with a listener, but I want to pass it on to all of you. 1983, there were 10 vaccines, 10 childhood vaccines. Autism rates were 1 in 10,000. In 2013, there were 32 childhood vaccines. Autism rates were 1 in 88. 2022, there were 74 childhood vaccines, and the autism rate is 1 in 36. Don't call me a conspiracy theorist. When the correlation, don't hit me with that correlation, it's not causation. Look, when the correlation is this hard, there's a pretty good chance that there's a link, unless somebody can provide some sort of other cause. You notice they always will dismiss and hand wave the vaccines on autism link, but they never offer up, no, it's not that, it's because of this. Because the only other thing they'd offer up is some other environmental factor. These aren't just wild statistics. I'm old enough, I remember. I cruise about on the internet and IRL. And one of the things that is really striking to me as somebody that's got some age on now is how many autistic people there are right now. I see people and it's like, I read things they say, you know, they post and stuff. And my reaction is always like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, where did all these autistic people come from? And I'm not being like down on these people. They can't help it. You know, they're not that way because they want to be. You have all these autistic people. Trust me. We did not used to have all the, when I was in high school, for instance, back in the 80s, I didn't even know what autism was. I never even heard of it. It was not this thing that was everywhere now. And now it's basically everywhere. When you look at the vaccine thing, it's amazing. Obviously, you know, like you've said, the schools are poison. These are very difficult decisions people have got to make. And you've got to use your good judgment. How are you going to do this? You know, 10 years ago, I'd have said, well, you know, depending on where you live, the public school, blah, blah, blah. I mean, things have gone so bad downhill in the last 10 years. Look, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, I know people got to work and whatnot, but I don't see a way around homeschooling now. And I realize for some people that may just literally not be possible. And I'm sympathetic. I get it. I would say before we move on to the next thing, I would say one of the most number one important things you can do is remember that you are teaching your children all the time. Now, I don't mean, you know, when you make it a point to point out to them this, that, or the other. I'm talking about by the way you live your life, by the way you demonstrate your behavior. Make it a point with your children that if you tell them you are going to do something, do it. I don't care if it becomes inconvenient or whatever the case may be. If you tell them, if you tell your son, next weekend, we're going to go pitch a tent. We're going to go camping in the woods. You know, when you get up the next weekend and you just don't feel like it or you got a headache or whatever, don't blow them off. Get your ass up and take them to the woods and go camping because you told them you would do it. I mean, follow through. This sounds like a simple thing, but you'd be amazed how many people continually blow off their kids. And then when their kids get older, they don't understand why their kids don't want to listen to them. Well, they want to listen to you because they don't really trust anything you say because you don't follow through. Always follow through on what you're going to say. And remember, you're always demonstrating your behavior. If you stand up and act like a total ass in front of God and everybody, that sticks with your kids. That is an impression on them. You're continually, and on the Bible, we're admonished that we demonstrate our faith by our actions. We are teaching your kids also by your actions. And I think that is one of the most important things to remember, that you're always, your kids, like if you put up surveillance cameras around your house, in every room, and you were recording yourself all the time, every day, while you're walking around the house, whatever you're doing, you're recording yourself. That's your kids. Your kids are like little surveillance cameras, and they're looking at you all the time. You may not even think they're paying attention, but they're looking, they're listening, they're taking in everything you're doing, what you're saying, how you're conducting yourself, how you treat other people, how you treat them, whether you're true to your word, and so on and so forth. They're taking all of that in all the time. It's never off, except when they're asleep. Now, let's get to the second part, which of course, obviously, is the reason why I put this in the Christian-specific segment. The Bible says men should be soft-hearted, and he couldn't explain exactly what that means to a man to have a soft heart. Well, this automatically, I'm going to tell you right now, this automatically tells you this was a failure in whoever was teaching that lesson. If the people come away, and one of the things I'm aware that I tend to do is I get into these things and I will sit there and we'll, like today, we basically wind up harping on something. And by the time I'm done, I'm thinking, you know, they get it. Shut up already. You're rambling. But I think one of the reasons to do that is to make sure that everybody gets it. Whoever at the MCC he went to, who gave this message, obviously couldn't explain it, what it was, because your stepson came away with not being really sure what that means and trying to figure out on his own. You failed in teaching whatever it is you're trying to teach. You know, if you're standing in front of a classroom of students and you're instructing them on arithmetic, and after the class nobody understands any of it, then you have failed as a teacher. My suspicion is the failure here is in the fact that it's not actually sound doctrine, as I think the listeners kind of picked up on as well. It was probably what most of these MCCs, I'll go out on a limb and say what most of these MCCs specialize in is emotional gibberish. They're basically motivational talk. You talk about they got the music and media shows and the flashing lights, all that kind of crap. You know, they specialize in this emotional entertainment sort of thing, emotionalism, emotional appeals. And so there isn't really a lot of explaining. It's just supposed to make you feel it. And what happens is, just as you're talking about here, the person who hears this goes away and they're trying to figure out what that means, and they're trying to figure it out on an emotional basis. So let's break it down a little bit. Let's get into this. For starters, when I read that the Bible says to be soft-hearted, my first thought was, I'm not aware of that. No, and you know, I'm not bragging. I'm really not. There's a lot I don't know. But normally when somebody says, well, the Bible says this, I automatically know more or less what they're talking about or what they're referencing. I'm not one of those people who can sit here and say, well, that's, you know, Romans chapter 7, verse 5. I might have to do a little research. I usually know what book it's in, or at least the general area that it's at. And I might have to research to find the exact chapter and verse. But normally when somebody whips off and peels off and says, the Bible says this, I have a general idea what, you know, what they're talking about. And I can find the verse they're talking about and go from there. When I read this, I'm like, I'm probably more familiar with the Bible than most people. And again, I'm not bragging. That's just a fact. The average person, not saying I'm the most versed in it by any stretch of the imagination. And my first reaction is, I don't know what the hell they're talking about with that. But let's get into it. The closest thing I could find with my little bit of research and honestly continuing not to feel very good. On my cold pills and researching Bible verses, these are the things I do for you. The closest thing I could come to is like Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. It's written, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, have forgiven you. Maybe this is what they're talking about. I don't know. It's a very specific verse. He's telling, you know, the church how to treat the brothers, how to treat one another. And even in the King James Version, I mean, this isn't really something that would be complicated or I think even need any explaining what it means to be tenderhearted and forgiving of one another in the church, your brothers in Christ, and, you know, in your fellowship. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what they were referencing, because I don't really know what it is they're talking about, but we're not done. Let's look at the opposite of it. Let's look at the opposite, because we know it's written, you know, basically, and we'll get a little more specific with a verse here, but we're told basically we know not to harden our hearts. You know, don't harden your hearts in the day of the Lord. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 3. We'll do verses 7 through 11. Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith, today, if ye will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do alway err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Now, here's where I think this gets a little interesting. If you wanted to define being quote unquote soft-hearted as the opposite, you know, as recognizing the admonition to not harden your hearts in the day of the Lord, in the day of provocation, as is written here. Let's get into what that means, not to harden your heart, and what exactly that means. And one of the big problems with Bible reading is everybody wants to apply like these modern understanding of things. And we live in a hyper feminized society. And the older you are, you remember times when it wasn't so, you know, it's ridiculous now. Everything appeals to emotionalism. I see people all the time, they'll read the Bible and they will try to apply their understanding of, you know, how words are used today to what was written and what was written so long ago. Also, the absolute importance of context, because when you understand that these were not originally written in English at all, they, you know, you've gone Greek, Latin, you know, and, you know, anybody who knows multiple languages will tell you that there are certain terms used in one language that there's not a direct translation for. So the person translating it has to get as close as they can. That's just real. You have these people who be like, no, it ain't. It's exactly, literally every single, just exactly. No, it's not, because there, anybody that knows multiple languages understands that sometimes there are terms that there's not an exact correlation, exact translation into another single word in the other language. And that's just how languages work. That's why you've got to understand the context. When you look at the context of what is being said, then you can understand. We've talked about this sort of thing here before. That's what you got to understand. And that's when you understand. I'm not talking about how the MCC tries to redefine everything in the Bible and say it doesn't meet up with today's standards. I'm not talking about that. I mean, understanding the context of things so that you understand what certain words mean. Now, hardening your heart in the day of the Lord. What does it mean to harden your heart against the Lord? It means to refuse to accept instruction. He talks about this verse we just read references when the Israelites hardened their heart and rebelled against God. And they were stuck in the wilderness for 40 years. He basically let that generation die off because he was mad at them. And, you know, he was not happy with them. And in his wrath, he said, you're not going to enter into the promised land that I promise. Y'all going to wander around out here and y'all going to die. And the next generation can go see it. Harden your heart means you refuse to accept correction. You refuse when the prophets would show up in ancient Israel and tell them, you're fixing to lose your country. This is what the Lord says. And they wouldn't hear. Why? Because their hearts were hardened. You have a prophet shows up and says, look, God is fixing to do A, B, and C because y'all are doing all this mess over here. And they wouldn't listen. Nobody would heed it. They would just be like, oh yeah, you know, let's drag this guy out and stone him. We're told that in the last days, in these last days, people will harden their hearts. They won't listen to sound doctrine. They won't see. They won't hear. They won't listen to the truth. They won't tolerate the truth. This is what it means to harden your heart. Now, if you want to define being soft-hearted as not doing that, that's well and good. But as I said earlier, the problem is this is a feminized society. When you use a term like be soft-hearted, everybody thinks, well, like you said, oh, be a doormat, you know, oh, just get along. Don't cause any waves. Be very tolerant. You got to be soft-hearted. You got to be tolerant. When the Bible is very intolerant, as we just read here, it was a reminder that when God got put out with them, he said, well, this entire generation can die out. I'm not going to take them. I'm not going to lead you to the promised land. Y'all just stay out there in the wilderness. And when all y'all are dead, we'll see if the next generation could do any better. Does that sound tolerant to you? Tolerant. You got to be tolerant. You got to be soft-hearted. It is important to understand what it means not to harden your heart when it comes to the truth, when it comes to the Lord. And his instruction, his rebuke, and what he shows you and what he teaches you. Yeah, you don't harden your heart. You want to hear what he has to say. You got to heed what the Lord is telling you. You got to heed his correction. You got to understand. Yeah, don't harden your heart against the Lord. It means accepting rebuke, accepting the idea that you could be wrong, adjusting where you need to, growing, learning, which is our, as you know, this is our role. This is why we're here. We're supposed to be growing spiritually. We're supposed to be learning, adapting, moving forward, expanding our horizons, our views, expanding ourselves spiritually so we're ready to enter into the next life. If you harden your heart against the Lord, if you harden your heart and you can't listen to any instruction, and there's no way in the world you could ever be wrong, then you're not going to grow. You're going to wither and you're going to die. So I would say, in conclusion on this point, no, I don't think the Bible says to be soft-hearted. It does admonish us not to harden our hearts in the name of the Lord. It's not telling us to be tolerant. It's not telling us to tolerate wickedness or evil. We're not to harden our hearts to the Lord's instruction, his correction, and his rebukes. And this is going to segue into the rest of what I was already planning to kind of discuss today. And that is to pose the question, is it possible to be ignorant and yet wise? I was thinking the other day about fools. I say fools all the time. Biblical foolishness. That's not name calling. We're going to get into what biblical foolishness means a little bit here. It's not name calling. It's biblical foolishness. It's a state of being. And I see fools all the time. And I was thinking the characteristics of the fool. And then I was thinking how they differ from the way of the wise man. If you call somebody a fool, people assume you're saying they're stupid or they're ignorant, but that's not what it means to be a fool. So if we ask the question, is it possible to be ignorant and yet to be wise? I would say the answer is most definitely yes. You see, everybody is ignorant of something. I'm ignorant of a lot of stuff. I'm less ignorant on a lot of things than I was, say, 20 years ago. But I'm ignorant of a lot of things, as are you, as is anybody else. The wise man knows when he is listening to something and he realizes it's a subject he is ignorant on, the wise man will hold his tongue. The wise man will keep quiet and listen to see if maybe he's going to get some new information and learn some more. The fool, on the other hand, will always open his mouth because, you see, pride and the fool are they go hand in hand everywhere they go. I saw a foolish statement someone made on the internet the other day, just a random place. And this person said something along the lines of, and you could tell, even though it's written text, you can tell it was said quite boastfully and quite proudly, as though they were saying something profound. I prefer knowledge to wisdom. As if that makes any sort of damn sense. When you read something like that, you know automatically. You see, the wise man holds his tongue. The fool announces his presence with a trumpet. The fool cannot wait to open his mouth and announce his presence. The wise man, if he doesn't understand what's being discussed, he will keep his tongue, he will keep his silence. But the fool will boast because, you see, the wise man understands that there's going to be things he doesn't understand. So for the fool, in his pride, there's nothing he doesn't understand. In fact, he cannot even be wrong about anything, you see. For the fool, he's always right, whether he knows what the hell he's talking about or not. When people stand back basically aghast at this fool, he takes their silence to mean they're amazed at how intelligent he is. See, in the fool's mind, he is the king of the world. The only reason he's not running everything is because there's something wrong with everybody else around him. It can't possibly be something to do with him. When the wise man receives instruction and new information, he is glad to accept it. When the wise man holds a certain view of the world around him, and suddenly he runs into somebody that has a different view that's more knowledgeable about that particular thing, and he realizes this by keeping his silence, and when he weighs what this new information is on the scales of truth, and he weighs it against what he thought was correct, and when this new information is closer to the truth than what he believed, he happily tosses away that old information. It's like receiving a great gift. The fool can never do this, because the fool can never admit to himself that he could ever be wrong about anything. This is a habit you've got to get into. And I'm trying to think where I want to go. I'm still on a lot of cold medicine, remember. So bear with me. I'm having to pause periodically. This is a little touch and go is because I keep having to pause and cough my lungs out. If you could go back and talk to Dan 20 years ago about anything, you know, politics, religion, whatever, and then you could compare that to Dan today, current year, you would think it's not even the same person. Now, the fool will scoff and say, well, that just means you don't believe in anything or you're stupid. No, this is what we're supposed to be doing. If your worldview, if your understanding of the world around you, if your understanding of the Lord God Almighty has not changed in the past 20 years, you ain't doing it right. This is why. There's so many things I want to say and I don't want to forget and get on one thing and leave it out. This is one of the most ridiculous things. This is why I do not do debates with atheist Spurgs. Once in a while, I'll get asked, you should debate this atheist Spurg. No, I don't waste my time. I don't cast my pearls before swine. It's inevitable. The atheist Spurg will sit there and peel off a Bible verse he heard when he was in the third grade and attending Sunday school. And he will peel this off at you. and say that he understands exactly what it means, and it means this, and this proves that Christianity is debunked or whatever the hell. And the amazing thing about this is that he never stopped to consider, you know, he's a grown-ass man now, say 30 years old or 40 years old, whatever the case, he'd be 30 years old. And he never stops and asks himself, you know, I was in the third grade when I heard this and came to this understanding. Maybe I'm not right about it. Maybe I should revisit it. Maybe, just maybe, there's a possibility I could be wrong. But for the fool, there's no greater thing. See, where the wise man welcomes new information and is excited and receives it as a gift, and when he can change his worldviews, he, you know, this little part of his view of the world or the Lord or whatever the topic may be, because now he has this great new information and he's closer to the truth. He's excited because he longs to be closer to the truth. The wise man is always humble. The wise man is going to remember, you know, that there's going to always be things he doesn't understand when he receives new information. This is a gift from God. The fool, on the other hand, takes instruction, rebuke, somebody pointing out the truth to him. He takes it always, 100% guaranteed, always as a personal insult. You're trying to give this retard relevant, new, truthful information, and he takes it. As a person, you can see it. You can see the way they react to it. Always with hostility. They never sit there and go, maybe I was wrong. No, it's always with hostility. Because the fool will always take this as a personal insult. Because you are saying, he who is the king of the world in his mind is wrong about something. They will wear you out. I don't deal with, when I realize somebody's a fool, I ain't even messing with them. It's just going to exhaust you. You have the example I used before. Atheist Berg whips out his Bible verse that he heard in third grade Sunday school, came to a conclusion when he was a child. Now he's 30 years old, has not adjusted that conclusion or revisited it a single time because he got it right back in the third grade. And everybody else that's come before him for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years got it wrong because he's so special. This is the way of the fool. Foolishness and pride go hand in hand. You can see this. And by the way, this is also a good example of what pride means in the Bible. It doesn't mean you accomplish something and you feel, you know, you take pride in your work. That's not the sin. When you read about pride, being admonished in pride in the Bible, you're getting an example of what that looks like. And the Christian believer, when confronted with this, with one of these people, what do you do? Well, you don't understand what it said. Then you'll see it right away. You've insinuated that he could be wrong about something. You just slapped him. You just, like in the olden days, you took the glove off and hit him in the face with it. Oh, the Christian believer then is left with no excuse or no other avenue then, but to try to explain, you know, that your one verse you heard in the third grade is actually a part of this giant thick book that you have never touched since the third grade. So let's explain the context of what this means. And as you begin to try to explain the context, they will every single time once again say, no, no, no. See, you're just making it say what you want it to say. Even though, yes, that's exactly what the fool was doing. No, you're just making it say, because they're not going to listen, because that's insinuating that they could be wrong. And that's a personal insult to them. Nothing wears me out like seeing Christian people waste their time on these. I don't understand. When I see Christian people trying to talk to these people, I don't understand why they waste their time. It's something foreign to me. I shake my head. I mean, I can see the fool. But I'm wondering why the Christian person is getting down and wallowing in the mud with the fool. I mean, why would you do that? This is what the Bible means when it says, don't cast your pearls before swine. Why are you getting down and wallowing in the mud with a fool? Now you both look foolish. I don't understand it. I really don't. I don't understand why Christian people do that. You know, my attitude, and you know, maybe I'm not the best example. My attitude is, I don't give a shit if you want to go to hell. You know, it's like Christian people get this idea like it's their personal mission to stop every single soul from going to hell. When I run into somebody like this, when I run into a fool, when I see a fool and somebody wallowing about and puffing themselves up with their pride, you know, my attitude is go to hell. I don't care. That's obviously where you want to go. You can take your pride and your foolishness and you're going to stumble right on through the gates of hell. I don't care. It's not very soft-hearted of me. I want to get into one other thing here before we wrap up. We live in this world. We live in this world now where everybody has to fit into an ideology. Ideologies are custom made for foolishness. And I'm not saying everybody that believes in a certain ideology is necessarily a fool, but it encourages foolishness. It is ideologies are for the lazy. It really, the more I have thought about it, the more I believe ideologies are for the intellectually, and I would even say spiritually, lazy. You create a box. And this is my ideology, whatever it is. Here's my ideology. And if it fits in the box, you agree with it. If it doesn't fit in the box, then you reject it. It's that simple. There's no thinking required. You're right all the time because all you got to do is go down the checklist of whether it meets the requirements to go in your ideological box, whether what's being presented makes a damn bit of sense or not. If you look at libertarianism, you can find so many things that don't make a damn bit of sense, but they'll hold it up and celebrate it because it fits in the box. And I'm thinking these are sometimes fairly intelligent people. And you're like, look, you're an intelligent person. I've read some of your works. You're not stupid. I can tell you're not stupid. How can you celebrate this, you know, this idea? How can you say this is a good idea simply because it falls into your ideological box when that is in a complete violation of common sense? Obviously, that's stupid. Nobody's going to do that. What? Look, the older you get, the more you look back on your life. And you realize how much you've been wrong about so many things over the course of your life. And you come to accept that and you get comfortable with it. And then you realize that that understanding is a blessing because it means you can grow. And when you get comfortable with that, it's more easy for you to celebrate, to be as the wise man. To open your heart and gladly accept new information and say, does this hold the truth? If you're stuck in an ideology, you're not going to be able to look and weigh these things on. See, this is why I say ideology encourages foolishness. Instead of looking at new information and going, hey, maybe I just got some new information that's truthful. I need to look at it and study it and think about it and pray on it and weigh it on the scales and compare this to what I thought was true in this matter and see whether I just got some new information. Ideology throws that out the window. You just go down the checklist. Does this fit in the ideology or not? If no, you toss it out. You don't consider it whatsoever. It encourages foolishness. The older you get, the more you realize there's no shame in being wrong about something. I've been wrong about so much stuff. Like I said, if you can go back and talk to me from 20 years ago, you'd be like, man, you're a dumbass. You don't know anything. I know a lot more now. I got a lot more that I don't know. And I'm more than anxious always to open my mind and consider new information. Now here's your white pill for you to put it, to use that analogy. Are you open to new information? If you have this mindset and this attitude to where you're not afraid to be wrong, and in fact, if you find out you're wrong about something, you get new information and it holds true, you are willing to celebrate it. Well, guess what? That puts you in the camp of the wise man. You see, being a wise man doesn't necessarily mean, let me rephrase that. Being a wise man does not mean that you know everything. Being a wise man doesn't mean that you have the answer to everything. Being a wise man often means that when somebody asks you about something, you look at them and say, I have no idea. I don't know. I need to look into that. What are your views on it? Tell me what you think. Let's think about this. This is the way a wise man behaves. If you can adapt that mindset, guess what? You on one level or another, fall into the category of a wise man. It's being able to be open to this information, weigh it, see if it makes any sense, see if it's true. That's what matters. See if it's true. You're a wise man. It doesn't matter that you don't know what everybody else knows. If you've got that attitude, if you've got that mindset, if you've got that set in your heart, you're in the camp of the wise men. Doesn't mean you know everything. It means you're willing to learn anything. It means that you're willing to take any position that you've got right now that you hold is true. If you find out that it's not true, I'm not saying be blown around by the wind. I'm saying if you get new information, compare it, study it, figure it out. If the new information is closer to the truth than your old information, you're tossing that old information over your shoulder and you've got new information and you're closer to the truth. This is what a wise man does. And this is what you will never see from the fool. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of today's discussion. Thank you again for all of y'all. Put a little something in the plate. It really means a lot to me in more ways than I can say. It really does on many, many levels. So I do appreciate it. I do appreciate you being here and tuning in this week. And I hope you'll tune in next week for the Parish of the Patriots.